corrupting the fight against AIDS. He wasn't well known as a brilliant scientist, and he had little background in managing a big bureaucracy. But Fauci did have ambition and drive to spare. This lackluster scientist was about to find his true vocation, empire building. Teflon Tony. The AIDS crisis's best known activist and the most vocal critic of the NIH response, playwright Larry Kramer, may have been the first to make the cold assessment about Dr. Fauci's winning capacity for combining charm and flattery with evasion, misdirection, and misinformation to bedazzle the media into suspending skepticism and overlooking his reliable incompetence. The main reason that Fauci has gotten away with so much, Kramer observed in 1987, is that he's attractive and handsome and dapper and extremely well-spoken, and he never answers your questions. Historians Torsten Engelbrecht, author of Virus Mania, and Konstantin Demeter called Fauci Dr. Baron of Lies. Asked to offer thoughts on Fauci, veteran AIDS war reporter Celia Farber pulls back and takes a broad view. She said, "People understand the Arendt concept of the banality of evil. You have set yourself the formidable task of deconstructing him. Why is he evil, which he is? It's not because he is so banal, so bureaucratic, so boring. That's the drag costume. In fact, he is a revolutionary, a very dangerous one, who slipped behind the gates when nobody understood what he was bringing in. What was he bringing in? He was bringing in, as a trained Jesuit and committed globalist, a new potion that would achieve any and all aims for pharma and the powers he served. The potion was then known as political correctness, now called woke. Fauci switched the entire linguistic system of American science from classical speak to woke speak. He brought in cancel culture, essentially, before anybody could imagine what it was. It was too perverse for genuine scientists to conceive of such a thing mixing with science. They could not believe it or grasp it, like a rape. It was incredibly confusing. That's what I documented on the ground, that horror and confusion among real scientists as American science changes so radically before their eyes to accommodate HIV. Farber went on. Let me elaborate a bit. Fauci's reign begins in 1984, a year of total change. Everything changes all of a sudden. Gallo is deployed with Margaret Heckler to make the declaration by U.S. government fiat that the probable cause of AIDS had been found and that it was some kind of transatlantic fusion that looked virus-like on the big screen, but was really neither a cogent virus nor a pathogen. The reason it flew to use, Nature Bio versus Technology founding editor, Harvey Bialy's word, was because everything had already changed. It was understood without overt commands that the gay cancer that had everybody in such a panic could not be assessed as complex toxic illness with a complex cause. The entire U.S. media understood what to say and not say, and not only because of the allegiance to the shadow government, but because the era of classical science had ended. It ended that day. It would henceforth be a crime against decency to, for example, address anything that could be making gay men sick other than the virus. That's not bad science. That's perfectly executed political correctness. And they are diametrically at odds in the biblical sense of good and evil. What Fauci did was he made political correctness the new currency of his funding empire. Peter Duisberg was not wrong about HIV and AIDS. He was politically incorrect about it, and that was how Fauci banished him, sentenced him to funding and reputation death, as though he had done something really bad by dissenting against HIV theory. Stop and think how insane this is. An elite cancer virologist brought over from Germany's Max Planck Institute, whose credentials are so outstanding, who was well on his way to solving cancer's genetics, felled suddenly by a fatwa issued by this mufti? Who was he to issue a fatwa against America's top cancer virologist? Well, he did. He blocked every federal research dollar to Duisberg after 1987 because Duisberg repudiated the woke ideology Fauci's HIV empire in a few paragraphs of a scientific paper that was about something else. He sustained the economic and reputational attack / vendetta for the next 3 decades. Without blinking, it's really an unbelievable story. It would make Americans' blood boil if they knew about it, because almost all have lost somebody in their family to cancer. Fauci had, by 1987, when Duisberg wrote the cancer research paper that sealed his scientific fate, an apparatus that included mass media, psychological operations, public health, this octopus that just straight up throttled the entire scientific tradition of Western civilization. Evidence-based science and the discourse culture that goes with it, gone. That's what he did. It's no small feat. He destroyed American science by snuffing out its spirit, the spirit of open inquiry, proof, and standards. The reason so many outstanding scientists lent their names to opposing Fauci's vendetta on Duisberg was not that they cared necessarily about the cause of AIDS. This was, for them, a battle over the very soul of science. Kerry Mullis, PCR inventor, broke down crying in an interview I did with him in 1994 talking about it, talking about what Fauci did to Peter Duisberg and what it meant. The real scientists were horrified. Suddenly, a guillotine was present, a new and strange terror. People were guilty of thought crimes like HIV denialism. Fauci had made political correctness the new revolutionary language, see? And that meant if you were bad, if you didn't push agenda-driven science, everything was taken away from you. And the media cheered. And anybody who didn't was destroyed, vilified, harassed, fired, in a word, canceled. His gifts for deflection, misdirection, and obfuscation, and perhaps his boyish charm, give Dr. Fauci a Teflon quality, which he shared with President Ronald Reagan, under whom he initially came to power. Something about Dr. Fauci allows him to escape responsibility for, or even mild questioning about, his steady parade of sketchy decisions, his confident claims unsupported by scientific evidence, his relentless cascade of lies and failed predictions, and his miserable track record for keeping Americans healthy. As the nation's newly appointed AIDS czar, Dr. Fauci was now a gatekeeper for almost all AIDS research. NCI already had long experience and robust infrastructure for conducting clinical trials on new drugs. NIAID had neither. Nevertheless, parroting NCI's vows to cure cancer, Dr. Fauci promised Congress that he would quickly produce drugs and vaccines to banish AIDS. In his 1990 book, Nussbaum concludes that Fauci's triumph over NCI cost many thousands of Americans their lives during the AIDS crisis. Myriad contemporary critics concurred with that assessment. The PIs, the Pharma Fauci Mercenary Army. NIAID's lack of in-house drug development capacity allowed Dr. Fauci to build his new program by farming out drug research to a network of so-called principal investigators, or PIs, effectively controlled by pharmaceutical companies. Today, when people refer to the medical cartel, they are principally speaking of pharmaceutical companies, hospital systems, HMOs, and insurers, the medical journals, and public health regulators. But the glue that holds all these institutions together and allows them to march in lockstep is the army of PIs who act as lobbyists, spokespersons, liaisons, and enforcers. Tony Fauci played a key historic role in elevating this cohort to dominate public health policy. PIs are powerful academic physicians and researchers who use federal grants and pharmaceutical industry contracts to build feudal empires at universities and research hospitals that mainly conduct clinical trials, a key stage in the licensing process for new pharmaceutical products. Thanks to NIH's largesse, and to NIAID in particular, a relatively tiny network of PIs, a few hundred, determines the content and direction of virtually all America's biomedical research. In 1987, some $4.6 billion of NIH's $6.1 billion budget went to these off-campus researchers. By 1992, NIH's budget had expanded to $8.9 billion, with $5 billion going to outside scientists at 1,300 universities, laboratories, and other elite institutions. Today, Dr. Fauci's NIAID alone controls $7.6 billion in annual discretionary expenditures that he distributes mainly to PIs around the globe. PIs are pharmaceutical industry surrogates who play key roles promoting the pharmaceutical paradigm and functioning as high priests of all its orthodoxies, which they proselytize with missionary zeal. They use their seats on medical boards and chairmanships of university departments to propagate dogma and root out heresy. They enforce message discipline, silence criticism, censor contrary opinions, and punish dissent. They populate the Data and Safety Monitoring Boards, DSMBs, that influence the design of clinical trial protocols and guide the interpretation of clinical trial outcomes and conclusions. The External Advisory FDA Panel, Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, VRBPAC, that guides determination of whether new vaccines are safe and effective, and merit licensure, marketing, and the CDC panel, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, that essentially mandates vaccines to children. They are the credentialed and trusted medical experts who prognosticate on television networks, now helplessly reliant on pharmaceutical ad revenue, to push out pharma content. These experts, Paul Offit, Peter Hotez, Stanley Plotkin, Ian Lipkin, William Schaffner, Kathleen Edwards, Arthur Kaplan, Stanley Katz, Greg Poland, and Andrew Pollard, appear between pharma ads on networks and cable news shows to promote the annual flu shots and measles scares, to drum up fears about COVID, and to rail against anti-vaxxers. They write the steady stream of editorials that appear in local and national newspapers to reinforce the hackneyed orthodoxies of the pharmaceutical paradigms, all vaccines are safe and effective, etc. They root out heresy by sitting on the state medical boards, the Inquisition courts that censure and delicense dissident doctors. They control the medical journals and peer-reviewed journal literature to fortify pharma's agenda. They teach on medical school faculties, populate journal editorial boards, and chair university departments. They supervise hospitals and chair hospital departments. They act as expert witnesses for pharmaceutical companies in civil court and the federal vaccine court. They present awards to one another. The 2006 meeting of CDC's ACIP provides an illustrative blueprint for how Tony Fauci and his pharma partners use their PIs to control the key FDA and CDC panels that license and recommend new vaccines for addition to the childhood schedule. That 2006 ACIP panel recommended two new blockbuster Merck shots, the Gardasil HPV vaccine for all girls ages 9 through 26, and three doses of a Merck rotavirus vaccine, Rotatec, for infants at ages 2, 4, and 6 months. Both Bill Gates and Tony Fauci, via NIAID, had provided seed and clinical trial funding for the development of both Gardasil and the rotavirus vaccine. Merck maintained it had not tested either vaccine against an inert placebo in pre-approval trials, so no one could scientifically predict if the vaccines would avert more injuries or cancers than they would cause. Nevertheless, the sister FDA panel, VRBPAC, approved Gardasil to prevent cervical cancer without requiring proof that the vaccine prevented any sort of cancer, and despite strong evidence from Merck's clinical trial that Gardasil could dramatically raise risks of cancer and autoimmunity in some girls, ACIP nevertheless effectively mandated both jabs. Gardasil would be the most expensive vaccine in history, costing patients $420 for the three-jab series and generating revenues of over $1 billion annually for Merck. That year, 9 of the 13 ACIP panel members and their institutions collectively received over $1.6 billion of grant money from NIH and NIAID. Systemic conflicts of interest. Pharma and Dr. Fauci similarly rig virtually all the critical drug approval panels using this strategy of populating them with PIs who, bound by financial fealty to pharma and NIAID funders, reliably approve virtually every new drug upon which they deliberate, with or without safety studies. From 1999 to 2000, Government Oversight Committee, GOC, Chairman Republican Congressman Dan Burton investigated the systemic corruption of these panels during 2 years of intense investigations and hearings. According to Burton, CDC routinely allows scientists with blatant conflicts of interest to serve on influential advisory committees that make recommendations on new vaccines, while these same scientists have financial ties, academic affiliations, and other interests in the products and companies for which they are supposed to be providing unbiased oversight. Paul Offit, voting himself rich. The notorious television doctor Paul Offit was the co-developer of the rotavirus vaccine that ACIP approved in that 2006 session. Offit is one of Dr. Fauci's most prominent PIs and an exemplar of the kind of power, influence, and lucre available to PIs whose entrepreneurial energies are unobstructed by scruples. Offit is the darling of both mainstream and social media. He is a perennial guest on CBS, NBC, ABC, and CNN, on cable shows such as The Daily Show, and a former guest on The Colbert Report. He is the New York Times guest expert and provides regular editorials for the Times op-ed pages. He is a frequently quoted expert on evening news broadcasts and a regular contributor to online media outlets including HuffPost, Politico, and The Daily Beast. Media platforms uniformly identify Offit as a vaccine expert from the University of Pennsylvania and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, CHOP. With Offit's encouragement, they seldom, if ever, disclose his pervasive financial entanglements with Dr. Fauci and the pharmaceutical companies. In 2011, for example, while presenting at NIH for the Great Teachers Lecture Series, he unabashedly declared, "I'm sorry, I have no financial conflicts of interest." Given his voluminous conflicts, the brashness of that claim indicates his shameless arrogance. Dr. Offit, in fact, is a vaccine developer who has made millions monetizing his relationships with vaccine companies. He occupies the Hilleman Chair at CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which Merck funded with a $1.5 million donation and named in honor of the company's heavyweight vaccinologist. Offit and his university and hospital affiliates have flourished largely based on hundreds of millions in grant monies from Dr. Fauci's agency and from virtually all the big vaccine companies. In 2006 alone, his institution, CHOP, received $13 million from NIAID and $80 million from NIH. Offit's biennial propaganda books, including titles like Vaccines, What Every Parent Should Know, and Autism's False Prophets, Bad Science, Risky Medicine, and the Search for a Cure, are unabashed paeans to Big Pharma and scourges to industry detractors and natural health. Offit uses these plugola tomes to exalt a wide range of miracle pharma products, to vilify vaccine hesitancy, and gaslight and bully the mothers of vaccine-injured children. Merck launders hundreds of thousands of dollars in personal payments to Offit through bulk purchases of these propaganda broadsides, which the company then distributes to pediatricians across the country. Offit is the most visible spokesperson for pharma, its allied industries, and the chemical paradigm in general. He represents himself as an authoritative source of reliable information, but he is actually a font of wild industry ballyhoo, prevarication, and outright fraud. He brazenly claims, against all scientific evidence, that vaccine injuries are a myth, that all vaccines are safe and effective, that children can safely receive 10,000 vaccines at once, and that aluminum is safe in vaccines for babies because it is a vital nutrient. There is no scientific study suggesting that aluminum is safe or that it has any nutritional value. Offit says that mercury in vaccines is harmless and is quickly excreted from the body. Published science demonstrates decisively that mercury is a cataclysmically harmful and persistent toxin, and it is well known that both ethyl and methylmercury bioaccumulate. Dr. Offit vocally supports GMO foods and chemical pesticides, and is an obstreperous